Hey again. Today we want to talk about the rise of populism. And why populism? Why was populism an important third party in the United States coming of age in 1892 during the celebration for the 400th anniversary of Columbus's arrival in the Americas, what he thought was China? And that celebration in 1892 in Chicago will work its way magically into the Chicago World's Fair the following year. In 1892, the Populist Party forms. The Populist Party will generally be an organization of farmers and Eastern workers who feel like they're getting the short end of the stick as far as work goes, as far as rights go, and it'll be an important third party. Now ask yourself, why would a third party form that's not Republican or Democrat, that's something different? Well, people felt like their needs were not being addressed with the first two parties, with Republicans or with Democrats. And so even today there are tons of third parties. You just don't hear about them because of, you know, different regulations needed to for a third party or any party to be placed on a ballot in a state or a federal election. So why would farmers and Eastern workers organize? Well, if you're a farmer, we talked about it in a previous lecture, weather problems, depressed prices, okay, suffering from a cycle of debt. You know, you didn't get all the crop in the year before. Your materials cost too much, okay? The railroad screwed you over by charging a different rate than what they promised you. And that was possible, you know, in the early 1870s and 80s because railroads were owned privately. They weren't owned by the government. They weren't regulated by the government. So you could get messed over pretty easy by the railroad. And bottom line, farmers really wanted cheaper monies. They wanted cheaper monies to be able to pay off their debt. Farmers over time had formed organizations, and those organizations were called granges, okay? And these were like, for lack of a better expression, unions, groups of farmers who are arguing for specific things. Now, remember in our last lecture, we talked about segregation. If you were living in the South, there was a white farmer's grange. There was a black farmer's grange. Well, you know, that made sense in a time of Reconstruction and after to some people, but looking at it backwards, people weren't always united in trying to work for the same kinds of things. And so one of the things the Populist Party really wants, okay, when they organize in 1892, is for government to control the railroads, because farmers felt like if the railroads could be regulated, controlled by the federal government, then they could deal with the other things like debt, like you know, bad environmental things that occurred, and the granges and the farmers' alliances were a way for farmers to get their voice out. Think about it. If you were an Eastern laborer back east, in a mill worker, a mine worker, there is no 8-hour workday. There is no protection on the job. There is no workman's compensation. There is no overtime. So think about why Eastern laborers and miners and workers would have wanted to have those kind of protections, would have wanted to join a third party that might win an election and might help you in that regard. The Grange was also called the Patrons of Husbandry, all right? And it starts out as a social group, but it ends up being a political group. And again, the big thing was, hey, please help us regulate the things that matter to us. In 1887, two things happen. One is a court case, a Supreme Court case called Wabash versus Illinois. And the Supreme Court decided that things like grain elevators that farmers are using to store their corn and their wheat are in the public interest. And so the public should help to regulate those, not the big industries, not the railroads. And also that same year, the federal government passed for the first time ever the Interstate Commerce Act. And the Interstate Commerce Act begins to allow the federal government to regulate railroad rates. Okay? In other words, farmers aren't going to be charged too high of a rate. Okay? So these are some things that the Grange pushed and that the government kind of responded on. but it still didn't mean that farmers could be protected by the banks or that every railroad line could be protected for them. You know, one of the things that railroads would do is they would charge you way, way, way too much, and there was nothing that you could do. So this is one of the reasons why the Interstate Commerce Act begins to fix this. However, government is still small during this time. There were still loopholes that railroads could use to get around, okay? And we'll see in our next big unit that big businessmen use things like rebates and kickbacks to their advantage and pretty much filled their pockets with a lot of money that farmers and eastern laborers would have really benefited from. So populism, let's remember, is a group of eastern workers and western farmers, and they're coming together for more government control and regulation of industry and immigration, more immigration restrictions. They want an 8-hour work day. They want a better income tax, okay? And so these are things that this third party is going to ask for. In 1892, they run their first candidate in an election. His name was Terrence Powderly. But it's really the elections of 1896 and 1900 that bring populism to the forefront. And you can't talk about populism without talking about a guy by the name of William Jennings Bryan. William Jennings Bryan was the best speaker in America. He was from Nebraska. He had won awards, and he becomes the presidential candidate for the Populist Party running against the Republicans and Democrats in 1896. Well, the Democrats, understanding that Republicans had won most of the elections after the Civil War, decide to get on board with the populist agenda because they really want to usurp and overthrow the Republicans in power. So in 1896, you have William McKinley, a Republican, who wants the United States to stay on the gold standard as a way of backing paper money. And then you have the populists and the Democrats, led by another William. This is why the elections of 1896 and 1900, I like to call the Battle of the Williams. William Jennings Bryan will argue for something called bimetallism. We need to remember that word, bimetallism. Bimetallism was a way of using gold and silver in the money supply to back paper money. And so you would have one piece of gold, but the silver ratio would be 16 to 1. This would be a deflated currency that would absolutely help the farmers who are in debt pay off a loan a lot quicker. So you can understand why a lot of farmers got behind the Populist Party. So remember bimetallism. In the election of 1896, there were several, quote, gold bug Democrats who are voting. The gold bug Democrats were people who were Democrats. They should have supported the Populist Party. They should have supported bimetallism, but they switched and voted for the gold standard. And, you know, this was something, the gold standard was something that William Jennings Bryan was very much against. And during the 1896 campaign, he makes a very good speech. Remember, he's the best speaker in America. And he makes a very good speech called the Cross of Gold speech. And he talked about, hey, if you stay on the gold standard, you're going to press America down. You're going to press a crown of thorns down on America. You're going to crucify America economically on a cross of gold. So he's very much against the gold standard. But you want to remember bimetallism, the ratio of 16 to 1 of silver to gold, and also the cross of gold speech. Okay? But it's the gold bug Democrats that helped to switch the election for McKinley in 1896. And William McKinley will be considered our first modern president. In 1900, the issues are the same. Are you going to stay on the gold standard, or are you going to move to some kind of bimetal system? Again, the Battle of the Williams in 1900, same result. William McKinley defeats the best speaker in America. Heck of a politician. Fundamentalist Bible believer in William Jennings Bryan. And we're going to see William Jennings Bryan again, as well as William McKinley. William McKinley, very good politician. As a congressperson, he had come up with the McKinley Tariff to protect American business. He had been a part of the first billion-dollar Congress, where Congress had appropriated that amount of money for the very first time. So he's a skilled politician, and the Goldbug Democrats will help him win the election of 1896 as well as 1900. This is not going to be the end of the third party. In fact, what we're going to see is a lot of the populist agenda, an eight-hour workday, some immigration control, an income tax, more government regulation of business, is really going to be embodied in the next big third party that we'll talk about, and it's not the populist party, but it's the progressive party, okay, led by Teddy Roosevelt around the time of 1912. And we're going to see that progressive Americans kind of pick up the mantle of some of these populist issues and start to argue more and more and more for reform. Thank you. Have a good day.